Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Time to do a podcast.
I'm getting right to it, Tim, because I got a lot to say about this first movie.
All right, then.
2021, Ghostbusters Afterlife.
This is where you went to the theater.
This is my popping my pandemic movie cherry and going in. It was not a pleasant experience. We have not been to the movie since.
Oh.
It's not the movie's fault. It was the chuds in the movie theater.
Oh, not chuds.
Chuds. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
Those stupid chuds.
Yep. Comics here under a dollar.
Comics here under a dollar. I love that. What, I'm surprised we haven't done Chud on here.
Yeah, no, I haven't done Chud. Cinema, what is it? Cinema Here Under Development, I think is the old movie site for it.
Something like that, yes. Yeah. That's probably right.
Yep. I watched this movie the first day you could, November 18th, 2021, on Thursday, because it was the midnight show.
Nice.
Air quotes. At 8 o'clock.
Sure.
IMDb, 2 hours, 4 minutes. It is a comedy horror directed by Jason Reitman, son of Ivan Reitman. Rest in peace, Ivan Reitman. Yeah. Really cool. So glad that Ivan made it long enough to see this movie completed and out finally after the problems they had releasing it into the pandemic and everything. So I'm glad Jason got to spend that time with his dad.
That's
he said
awesome.
It made them a lot closer doing the project and everything. So like everything on the like behind the camera half of this movie was nothing but just like a dream project from all accounts. Everybody who worked on it was a fan. Jason, it meant a lot to him. He was scared about doing it because of what it meant to him and his dad and everything. So it's like really heartwarming to hear. And you know, I paid attention to every word that came out on the internet about this film.
Yeah.
So I was like, just so hoping this would be the sequel we deserve after the abortion that is Answer the Call. This movie's got the Paul Rudd, it's got the McKenna Grace, it's got the Finn Wolfhard.
Oh, so hard.
Because when you go hard, you go Wolfhard.
Wolfhard.
The summary for this film, when a single mother and her two children move to a new town, they soon discover they have a connection to the original Ghostbusters and the secret legacy their grandfather left behind.
I like this idea.
Yeah, very charming. And I was watching an interview with Jason Reitman, and he said that this is a movie about parents losing connection and reconnecting with their kids, because obviously like the family moves out there, the woman who moves them out there, the single mother, is Egon's daughter, and she kind of lost touch with her father, and you know what I mean, like through the events of this movie kind of reconnects with the like fonder memories of her father and realizes things about her father she hadn't before. And
that's cool.
She had kind of lost touch in trying to maintain a household. She's lost touch especially with her younger daughter. Finn Wolfhard is the son. They're connected a little bit, like they have a good relationship, but he's a little older. He was there through times that were a little easier. But the daughter, whose name is Phoebe in the movie, she doesn't really connect with her mother at all. She's basically like young Egon, essentially. Like she's nerdy, she's very dry and to the point. There's a running gag through the whole movie where she tries to tell a funny joke and they're all like really bad jokes and things like that. It works pretty well, and they like set it up and pay it off really nicely in the movie. So my thoughts on this movie: finally get a good continuation of the franchise.
Nice.
Because I will say, like Ghostbusters 2 in the previous episode, this movie is less good than the score I personally will give it. I will honestly tell you where I think it lands as a film at the end here. But for me personally, as such a big fan of the Ghostbusters, obviously I'm going to score it a little differently. I think it's a great way for this to bring Ghostbusters to a new generation. And you know, we talked about this a bunch. Shout out to Ryan Young, because his daughter loves Ghostbusters because of Answer the Call. And so that really helped me cope with how much that movie irritated me.
Right.
And not because it was a female cast or anything like that. But what irritated me is this movie so easily, this idea is, they started this franchise. You have particularly the Bill Murray character, Peter Venkman, is all about making money. There's no way he wouldn't try to franchise rights it. Like, oh, cool, yeah, you can be part of our franchise. He could have just worked in a little, like, they got kind of conned, you know what I mean, when they started this Ghostbuster franchise in this one, instead of just ignoring the fact that any of them existed. Had they done that, I would have been perfectly happy with it, because then we could have gotten stories from other franchises as it grew. And I think Sony wants to kind of do that. Like, they want to take the New York original Ghostbusters and expand their mythology outward, which makes sense, and it's super easy to do.
Sure.
And 2016 just dropped the ball so spectacularly, but it brought it to a new generation. So if there are kids who dig it because they dug that one, fucking A. That's what it's all about. So that made me really happy to hear that. You know what I mean? It's something I didn't think about. You know what I mean? Right. That's like,
good job, Ryan.
Not for me. It's for the kids.
It's all about the kids.
Yeah.
And she's the most metal kid I've ever seen.
She's the raddest. Yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. So if she likes it, you know, it's probably better than what I'm giving it credit to be. So I hope to hear, I haven't heard from Ryan yet. They were getting ready to watch this last time I talked to Ryan. So I'm really hoping. I told him that I need the full rundown and I didn't give a shit what he thought. I wanted to know what she thought. So he's well aware of that.
So good.
Yeah, so I'm excited to hear the report back as to what she thought about it. So I'm pumped. So, yeah, well, on its own, it's pretty average. I do think what this was a phenomenal love letter to Ghostbusters.
Perfect.
I am going to have to spoil this film to properly explain it like Tim did with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So if you do not want to hear what happens, and I assure you, if you don't know what happens, you do not want to hear this. So this will be the only time I actively encourage you to not listen to this podcast. So don't listen starting right now. So now that you're back with us, if you've stuck around...
You fool.
I'm going to spoil it. I wasn't joking. So the whole thing sets up. The beginning, I don't know if you watched, they did like... have you seen this yet?
No.
Okay. So I am spoiling it for you.
It's fine.
Tim can't run. He's stuck.
La 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 la.
He stepped in a spot that was actually like two holes dug in, and it's just full of AOL discs, so it's like AOL quicksand.
It's like that scene in Saw 2. Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, the needles?
Yeah, it's the needles scene.
Yep. That is a hard scene to watch.
It's awful. But let's not talk about that.
No. So the whole concept is Egon goes off and nobody knows why, you come to find out. It's because he realizes that Ivo Shandor, who built the apartment complex in the first movie, actually had owned a mining company where they were refining the big selenium pillars to build the apartment complex, which is a throwaway line from the first one. But they're actually mining it in this town. And so Egon realizes, oh shit, there's all this stuff going on. And this is now also capable of kind of like backdooring Gozer back to existence.
Mm.
So Egon sets up this whole big thing and whole big, like he essentially dedicates the rest of his life after he finds out it's a thing to capturing Gozer again.
Nice.
And so the movie picks up in the beginning. It's him actually doing it. Like, I'm going to capture Gozer. And there's this cool moment where he wrecks a truck trying to escape from it. And he has this ghost trap and he's holding it up in the darkness. And the spirit is like, you can't really see it, but it's like coming at him. And he's like, you know, hyper badass. And he like hits this button and you're like, oh fuck, what's going to happen? And nothing happens. And then it's just boom. And then the credits come up. For the intro credits come up and you're just like, what the hell happened?
That's so a good mystery for the,
it is cool.
Of the movie.
And then you kind of build up what is Ghostbusters through the movie, and you get these characters, the brother, sister, and mom, and they're in a new town, so they meet people. And one of the characters that came out, I knew his name because of the toys, and I was like, I'm gonna hate this character. I don't know what this movie's about. It's this little kid named Podcast.
Nice.
And I was like, he's called Podcast, seriously?
Nice.
Amazing character. It's this kid's first movie ever, and he kills it.
Yeah.
He's so funny and likable. I was stunned how much I liked this character.
That's wild.
Yeah, I was blown away. I mean, and this kid had so much heavy lifting to do for me to like a character named Podcast.
Yes.
I was like, get the hell out of here with Podcast. Nope, love Podcast. He's going to be at Monster Mania coming up, and I'm sad I'm not ready to go to conventions yet because I would love to meet Podcast.
Man.
Yeah. But that being said, you kind of see them discover things that go on. And there's like things in the house that like start moving on their own. And so like the little girl plays chess, and then the next morning she wakes up and a chess piece is moved. And so she's playing. So you start to realize like the house may be haunted.
Right.
And then you start to see over time that like they've discovered that downstairs there's a basement and there's all the jumpsuits. There's proton packs down here. And so of course, the little girl steals a proton pack. And meanwhile, Finn Wolfhard's like hot wiring the Ecto-1 and bringing it back to life so he can drive it around. So then they end up kind of doing all of this. She brings a ghost trap to school because they're doing like summer classes, and Paul Rudd teaches the summer classes, and he's a seismologist who's like, I can't understand what's going on in this town. It's
sure.
like weird. There's no fault lines, but the town shakes every
day. It's a river of slime.
It ends up being this mine.
Okay.
And it's, you find out that Egon was actually like building a protective grid that's stopping these things from crossing into our world, and that's what's causing the shaking. Is every day they're trying to emerge through, and Egon set up this like proton pack thing, and eventually it's going to give way, right? Like it's not going to last forever,
right?
And so you move through the whole story, and then like Phoebe's like learning about all of this, and it kind of pays off towards the end. They do the same setup. There's the steps. The mom becomes the Sigourney Weaver character. Paul Rudd becomes the Lewis Tully character. Nice. They turn into the dogs. Nice. And everything kind of like, oh shit, Gozer's back. And Gozer does come back.
Nice.
And so it's up to them to kind of stop Gozer. And it's like, how the hell are these three kids going to stop Gozer? That's and so they cool. kind of manage to almost do it. And they lure Gozer back to the farmhouse. And you realize that Egon's whole shtick, they call him the dirt farmer the whole time. He wasn't a dirt farm. It was he planted in the ground like 300 ghost traps. And his plan was to lure Gozer into this field and like ghost trap the fuck out of her.
Yeah.
And so they set it all up to do it. And of course, things go wrong at the last minute. And as they set up to the third act, she calls, she makes a call. They're in jail. So because they get arrested. So she makes a call to the original Ghostbusters number, which is Dan Aykroyd's bookstore from Ghostbusters 2, Raise a Cult.
Nice.
And so he answers the phone and he realized that him and Egon, he's like, you know, Egon Spangler can rot in hell. He stole all the equipment and just took off and nobody knows where he is. And then she's like, well, he's dead. And he's like, oh shit. And then as the movie gets into this third act, all the original Ghostbusters show up. They just pull up and it's just like, yes. And it's like, I'm already stoked. I'm already tearing up. I'm like, this is great. It's the Ghostbusters. It's really them. It's just like they all slip into the role so perfectly well. All three of them do an amazing job. Bill Murray apparently ad-libbed this line. He's like, all right, we're going to go on three, but go on two. One, two. And they all fire their proton packs. It's like perfect. It's like, man, they really just know these characters inside and out. So it's really cool to see. They immediately are like, okay, cross the street. Let's get her. It doesn't work. So they're like, shit, we don't have enough power to do this. So they're doing it.
They don't have Egon.
Right. And McKenna Grace is now firing the proton pack and she like can't quite get a hold on it. And then two spectral hands actually come in and hold the proton. And then
pulls
back.
I'm going to cry.
Pulls back and it's Ghost Harold Ramis.
Oh my God.
I shit you not. And at this point, I am blubbering.
I'd be blubbering. I'm about to blubber now.
I'm in a mask in a movie theater and I'm upset that people are in here without a mask. And I'm in a mask crying like a child.
Yeah.
And so all of them combined, of course, have the ability to do this. At the end of it, this beautiful moment, it kind of just pulls back with after they've defeated Gozer on the screen in the film. Like, we're not in the credits, in the film, it just comes up in the top and it says for Harold. Unbelievable. So at that point, I am just like unabashedly wailing because it's just like, man, this is so like that kind of nails it. Like, it's truly a love letter to the franchise that is Ghostbusters. You can tell that Jason spent so much of his time making this feel like a love letter. Like, it means a lot to him, his dad, he knew all those guys growing up. He worked a little bit on set. It just means so much to him. It means that to all of us. So like seeing this as a movie, it can't ever be a movie to me, right? Like this was monumental. And what's really cool is you get after the credit sequences and they allude to the fact that they're going to, of course, continue it. Mm-hmm. And what's really neat and I think a really nice touch is they've pinned everything on Winston. Winston's become the most successful. He's a businessman and he's made buckets of money. He's kept the Ghostbusters franchise actually like legally like and financially afloat. Mm-hmm. He pays for the bookstore to stay open. Annie Potts is in it earlier as Janine and she alludes to the fact that, you know, there's a Winston and then at the end she's like talking to him and stuff. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, the bookstore doesn't cost me that much to keep going and it makes Ray happy kind of thing. So it's like, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then once Winston at the end, he's kind of like, you know, this is pretty sweet. Maybe I should like look into reopening this. Like, he's thrilled the Ecto-1's still there. And like everything that just happened. And so it's like, oh shit. And then like after the credits, you get scenes in the New York firehouse. And it's just like, fuck, this is going to be the shit.
That's so cool.
Really awesome. And I'm leaving out some parts that are worth going back to revisit. But I did not know that they were going to do the Harold Ramis thing.
Yeah. I'd be crying.
It's beautifully done. Like it
when
looks
I watch
just
this
like
movie,
him.
I'm probably going to cry.
I think the normal person would tear up a little bit. Sam said that she was a little emotional at the time he showed up because it's just kind of like a lovely touch if you don't know Ghostbusters. But if you grew up with Ghostbusters, you're just like, it's just so smartly handled. And like the father relationship obviously meant a lot to Jason.
Yeah.
And it just really helps tell this really deeper story. While not, again, not as good as a score as I will give it, I think it's still a good movie. Not as good as it is a love letter to the Ghostbuster fans.
There you go. I like that.
Long-winded. I told you I need every minute.
That's good.
I took up a whole episode with this one. So IMDb, 7.2 out of 10.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 297 critics gave it 63%.
That feels low.
Audience, 5,000 plus verified Ghostbuster fans.
That's going to be high.
94%.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see the peaks and the valleys. As a film, I do think a 6.5 is about right.
Okay.
It's a little like, okay, like, I know this is coming. Okay, he had to do this. Like, the Finn Wolfhard character doesn't get quite enough business, but just kind of needs to be in there because they need somebody to drive the car.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, and there's a cringy moment where they use the who you gonna call line, and it's like literally like, ooh. Yeah, it's a little rough. But overall, this movie is a ton of fun, and as a love letter to Ghostbusters, I think it's an easy 8.5 for me.
Nice.
So good. It's not the original, but it is damn close.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I can't very wait cool. to watch it.
It's very good.
I'm so gonna cry.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, how do you follow up that with a terrible movie? That's how you do it.
That's the best way to do it.
I think so.
No comparison.
There's no comparison to this 1953 classic, The Mesa of Lost Women.
Yes. We can't find them. They're lost.
They are lost. And I watched this only because...
There was a mesa?
No, the description was so amazing. There is a mesa, actually. But no, the description was so amazing. I watched this on the 13th of February. It's mm-hmm. an hour 10.
This is the day before Valentine's Day.
Day before.
Okay.
It's horror sci-fi, directed by Ron Ormandy and Herbert Tavos.
Two people to get this one done.
Starring Jackie Coogan,
mm-hmm.
Alan Nixon, and Richard Travis.
That's too many dudes for a Mesa of Lost Women.
This is a Mexican horror movie, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Your IMDb movie summary. A mad scientist named Arana.
Of course.
Is creating giant spiders and dwarves.
A classic combination.
In his lab on Zarpa Mesa, Mexico.
Oh, yes.
He wants to create a master race of superwomen by injecting his female subjects with spider venom.
Of course.
I think it's the dwarves part that really got me in. I'm like, wait, why?
Giant spiders and dwarves.
And I'm like, what?
I want giant spiders, tiny people. Make it happen.
And they do. They sure do.
Wow.
The reasoning for it, I'll say, is his venom that he concocts works on the females, gives them, they don't talk, which they're kind of actually kind of creepy. The women are actually kind of good for what this is. They're like just spider women, and they're strong. They're like Spider-Man. They're strong. They got mm-hmm. spider powers kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like the heavies. When he puts it in men, it ruins their bodies and turns them into dwarves.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a throwaway line. There is some stuff that they do in here, like, because this is 53. There's some weird, like, classic filmmaking tricks they do.
Mm.
It's black and white, this version. You see, like, a giant spider leg go by real quick.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm like, and it's filmed at night, and like, you blink and you miss it. But yeah. If you catch it, and you catch all the little weird, like, I'm like, these are the good things I can say about this movie. Stuff like that.
Love it.
However, my first bullet point, holy fucking racism.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
There's an Asian actor who just eats so much shit. This whole movie, it was hard to watch.
Ooh.
I felt so bad for him.
Yeah.
Not good.
The cringe factor.
Yeah. So the characters survive, and they're telling a flashback to authorities, which just gives away who lives.
Right.
Because everybody else surely must have died.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not told in a good way, I guess.
Right.
So it's like, all right, well, why should I care about any of these other people? There's an escaped mental patient who is a very bizarre character. He gets out of the mental hospital, goes to the bar, gets a gun, takes everyone hostage.
As you do.
And he's just like, I want to go flying. You got a plane? All right, let's go. I got a gun. And they're like, all right. And they fly to the Mesa.
Is that how you get on a plane?
It's very strange.
That's weird.
Very weird, yeah.
I don't think you're allowed to do that now.
And they're like, we shouldn't be up here. He goes, get out of the plane. I want to go for a walk. And it's just like, oh my God. First of all, the way you're horrible racism, the way you're dealing with mental health. Of course, I understand it's 1953, but holy shit.
Right.
This movie is atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. The Mesa of Lost Women is atrocious.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the spider women. They were fine. The giant monster spider that is alluded to that you never actually see is fine.
You see the leg
The cardboard leg that flies by.
Love it.
The spider leg. Yeah, no, just this movie's awful.
Okay.
And I'm glad it's on this episode with your Ghostbusters because I can make this quick.
Yep.
IMDb, 2.8.
Okay.
Rotten Tomato Critics, there's only one review in, and so it doesn't have a score. The audience, 100 plus verified gave it a 17%.
Yikes.
And I gave it a 2.0.
Ooh.
This is some bullshit.
Yikes.
It bad.
Good on you for making it through it.
Oh, I watched the whole thing because I just sat there with my jaw open.
Yep.
Like, what the? And the Asian guy makes it really far, and I'm just like, oh, man, stop. Just stop.
So bad. 1996.
I remember 96.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jingle All the Way.
Oh, shit. We're getting into Christmas territory.
We are.
Sam's Christmas clutches.
That's right.
Ow.
The cold clutches of Sam. Watch this after Thanksgiving, as you would figure. 11/27/21. 1 hour, 35 minutes long. Watch this while I was putting up the Christmas tree. It's a comedy holiday film directed by Brian Levant, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger of Aftermath.
Yep.
Sinbad.
Yeah.
And Rita Wilson of certainly other films.
And Paul White.
Yeah.
The Big Show.
And let's not forget about Phil Hartman. Rest in peace.
Oh, I miss him.
Movie summary. A father vows to get his son a Turbo Man action figure for Christmas. However, every store is sold out and he must travel all over town in an attempt to get one.
Tickle me, Turbo Man.
Whew. Ta-ta, Turtle Man. My thoughts on this movie. It does hit the Christmas themes, right? Family's more important than commercialism things. We don't need stuff if we have each other. It's just a little bit too much of a mess where it's trying to poke fun at commercialism, but then at the same time, it's trying to be endearing and keep its themes about commercialism. I do enjoy this movie because I think I was the right age for it coming out in 96, but it's like a little too slapsticky for Arnold. I don't think Arnold's best work in comedy was the slapstick stuff, his physical comedy. I feel like his timing and his seemingly poor timing, which was actually good timing on his part, was some of his strengths, like Twins,
Kindergarten Cop.
Those are some of his stronger comedies, and they're not like phenomenal or like well-remembered comedies, but I enjoy them.
They're good, yeah.
This one's just a little bit too much like him running and falling over.
Right.
And or like he can't do a thing, but he's Arnold freaking Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. He's the ultimate man.
Yeah, so it goes from silly to serious a little bit too much, but overall I think it's pretty kind-hearted and it does what a Christmas movie should be doing. IMDb gives it a 5.7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 49 critics, 20%.
20 Sinbads.
100,000 plus people reviewed this, though, from the audience to a 38%.
Wow, I would have thought that'd be way higher.
Yeah, me too, because I know this is one that they'll run for 24 hours when it's Christmas time.
Yep.
But I guess not as beloved as I would think, but I came in and gave this a 5 out of 10.
I think that's really good for you.
Yeah.
I think that's good. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Look,
I think
you.
It's not like you're going to be sad you watched it, but at the end of the day, you're going to be like, was this really that good outside of like Curtis Armstrong making a cameo and Paul White, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Paul White.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to take us home.
Please.
With a movie I hadn't heard of, and I just randomly put on and enjoyed.
Ooh.
That's fun, isn't it?
I love that.
After the Mesa of Lost Women.
It was amazing you were willing to bet on this again so quickly.
2021's Antlers.
Antlers. Oh, okay. I'm familiar with this. I've not seen it, but I'm familiar with it.
All right. I watched this on Valentine's Day
with
my wife.
Nice. This was an odd choice.
Yes. It's an hour that she chose it.
Wow.
Even odder.
Good on her, yeah.
Yeah, because she's not a horror person.
Yeah.
But this is also drama.
Yep.
It's an hour 39, drama, horror, mystery, directed by Scott Cooper, starring Kerry Russell, Jesse Plemons, who's great, and Jeremy T. Thomas, which is the little boy. The children actors in this are fucking awesome.
And
this movie is creepy.
Yeah.
The kids are scary. It is gross. Everything's gross. Okay.
I love a good gross movie.
This is awesome. So horror and gross transformations. It's based on some real folklore. I'm not going to spoil what it's based on in case you know it's going into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when I figured out what it was, I was pumped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really happy.
You see it a little bit more now. I think it's become more popular to see this in horror. But yeah. Awesome, awesome, like, I guess, urban, not necessarily an urban legend, but like,
yeah,
cryptid.
It's kind of, it skates between, right?
It walks the line, yeah.
It walks tall.
Yeah. Very cool.
But it is super cool, and it's fairly accurate, I believe, to the myth, supposedly. The child actors, again, just so good. There's two little boys, they're brothers, one's younger. The one is probably like 12, and the little boy's like 8 or something.
Nice.
So what happens is the father is a scumbag. I think he's trying to make meth or something. He's down in this old mine, and he gets attacked, and he doesn't die. But he's slowly getting more sick and more sick. And then the little boy starts getting sick. And it is gut-wrenching to see the little boy getting sick. And the father's more sick. You see what is happening.
Right, you know.
So you see the horror. You see the end of the line where this is going.
That's so cool.
And you see it start happening to this little boy.
That dread.
And then the other brother trying to take care of him and, like, feed him. And, oh, yeah. And, like, the dad is terrifying.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. And it is creepy. They're in this old house. The dad, you find out a little later, is, like, sets this up for the boy. Like, no matter what you hear, don't let me out. Don't ever let me out.
Wow.
And it is wild. And then the little boy starts getting sick, so he puts the little boy up there with him. Oh, it's...
Yeah, that's
cool. This is really heartbreaking. Jesse Plemons plays the sheriff, and he has a very interesting dynamic with his sister. His sister is the school teacher of the little boy. That's why they're like, something weird going on over here with the little boy. And he's like, all right, I'll go check it out. His dad's a known scumbag.
Yeah.
Let me go look. And no one can quite figure it out. And it just, this is a super good horror movie.
Nice.
Dark in tone, both monster and real world horrors. So you're just like, you're not sure where this is going to go.
I love when there's like a little supernatural current that kind of gets like all these other scary things. It's like no matter how scary what should be the scary thing is, the horrible stuff that circles around it with humanity makes it worse. It's like,
It's almost like the teacher and the sheriff, they're reliving some of their past. They have past trauma that's shared, and they're dealing with the real world stuff and how that molded them while trying to help this kid and not have stuff happen to them. Nice. They're thinking it's something real world initially.
Yeah.
And it's not, but because the kid looks real sickly, the kid's like losing weight. Mm. He's starting to look a little gross.
That's cool.
And like, there's an awesome part where Jesse Plemons is like, he stayed. Apparently the father was abusive and the woman left. He stayed.
Hmm.
And she's just like, you don't understand to the length what he did to us, what he did to me. He goes, what do you think he did to me? I stayed. And it's just like gut rent. Like everything is so awful in the best way in this movie.
Love it.
Let's see what people think. IMDb gives it a 5.9.
Hmm.
Rotten Tomato critics, 60%, 173 critics.
Okay.
The audience, 500 verified plus, 68%.
Okay.
My wife and I agreed on the score for this one.
A Valentine's Day indeed.
Yeah. What?
Wow.
7.0.
Nice.
This is an amazing horror movie.
That's cool.
And I loved every second of it.
Wow. Very impressive.
Yep. Go tell your significant other you love them.